And finally, the very first song ever played on the moon was Fly Me to the Moon. Greg's favorite by Frank Sinatra. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
We are happy to have Tim Kirchen and his laughter back. I must offer him some condolences. He just recently lost his mother. I hope I'm not speaking out of school here when I tell the audience, Tim, what an extraordinary son that you have been for many, many years with your mother living at home with you. I hope you're okay. I'm sorry that we have not talked before now.
Well, thank you, Dan. My mother deserved everything that we gave her because she took care of all of us growing up. And everyone says this about their mom, but my mom was the greatest mom ever, the greatest grandmother ever, and the greatest wife ever. And even though she was 96 at the end and in terrible health, it was a terrible loss. And but finally, she's with my dad again.
I'm sorry, and I know that you were really there for her. Like, she lived with you guys for a long time, right?
Yeah, for 10 years. So my brother and I took care of her with some help, so she did not die alone. This is all terrible, but the guy up the street lost his mom about a month before me, similar age, and she was in a old folks home, and he wasn't even allowed to go in to say goodbye to his mother. So my mom died at home with my brother and I by her side.
Again, my condolences, and no way to segue not awkwardly to some of the nonsense that we do around here with Tim Kirchen, but we are very happy to have him back to discuss the baseball season. He'll be on with us every week as he has been for many years. Was the Marlins thing, Tim, in any way avoidable?
In hindsight, Dan, I don't think it was. I think we're getting to the point that we're understanding that the corona has overpowered the world, the country, and certainly baseball now. This could not have just been a mistake by one of the Marlins that led to all of this. I don't know if it could have been avoided. But in hindsight, that Sunday game against the Phillies should have been canceled. Somebody should have canceled that game. Once you find out there are four positive tests, then that's got to be the end of that. But now, of course, we've got the Cardinals and the Brewers game postponed for today. 20% of the games won't be played today. This is a very, very discouraging situation.
How do we arrive in a place, and I think I read this correctly, Tim, that the Marlins were deciding among themselves, with Miguel Rojas as captain, deciding amongst themselves whether or not to play after the positive tests? How is that possible?
Well, there's a big question. Should the players be making that decision? Is that not the decision of the general manager or the club president or the manager or the owner, or is it not a Major League Baseball decision, which would be made now, of course, in hindsight? But there's just no way that players should have been left to make that decision, because they're baseball players and they're bulletproof, at least they think they are, and they think, well, we've got a game today, we're going to play. And good for them for thinking that way. That is their mentality. But somebody in a leadership position, specifically at Major League Baseball, should have said, no, we're not playing this game. And I think we could have avoided potentially some other issues, but I don't know if you could have avoided those first four positive tests, which have led to so much more now.
What was your level of optimism that they could get through these 60 games before they started, and how did that change, if at all, after three games when all the Marlins started testing positive?
Well, I started about a few days before the season. I thought there's a 75% chance that we're actually going to start and a 25% chance that we're going to finish. And that was based on all the people I talked to in the game. And I asked every one of them that question. What is the percentage chance we start? What is the percentage chance we finish? And I didn't talk to 100 people, but I talked to a lot of people, and I didn't have anyone over 50% that we're going to finish the season. And now you have to think that number 50, 25, 20% that we finish, I think you have to go below that at this point, given what happened to the Marlins, what now the spot the Phillies are in, not to mention the Nationals, and now the Cardinals and the Brewers. Plus, Dan, we are traveling now. The traveling the first week of the season is leading to even more trouble. And the virus isn't just now on the East Coast. It seems to have spread to the Midwest. So that's the discouraging part, is it's no longer isolated to the Marlins.
Does Will Cain look like he cites case law when petitioning the commissioner to void a trade in your fantasy football league? Does Russell Wilson look like the husband helping his wife cook wearing an apron that reads, "Kiss the chef"? Does Tony Kornheiser look like a grouchy pilgrim from the original Thanksgiving complaining about the turkey being too dry? Does Adam Silver look like Clippy, the paperclip helper from Microsoft 97?
Save that one.
What has been surprising outside of the virus-related stuff from the first week of the season? You're not surprised at all that after three games, there were no undefeated teams left in the sport.
Right. That was a bit surprising that, you know, the Tigers and the Marlins and the Orioles were all 2-1 after three games. That was surprising. But speaking again to the beauty of baseball, bad teams can beat good teams home and away all the time in baseball. That's what makes it so interesting to me. All the injuries to these starting pitchers is a red flag also. Maybe it's just a coincidence. Pitchers get hurt all the time anyway, but, you know, half a dozen really good major league starting pitchers have missed the start or are going to be out for the year. That's not good. And sorry, Dan, I've been saying this for years now. The base running and the fundamental play in the big leagues is terrible. The players are bigger, stronger, faster, and better than ever, and they have less of an idea how to play than at any time in the 41 years that I've covered. I've done four games on TV now, from my house, by the way, and again, every game there's an egregious base running mistake. Now, maybe that's in part to a shortened spring training and then a truncated summer camp. Maybe they're just not in baseball shape all the way around, but there's been some pretty sloppy play, and we've had sloppy play for years, but that needs to get cleaned up long after we get through whatever COVID is going to give us.
Does Mike Gundy look like the guy who sunbathes naked in Cancun and goes out of his way to make eye contact with everyone who passes by? Does Jeff Fisher look like his Saturday plans consist of wearing an orange shirt to Home Depot in the desperate hope a lesser man asks him the difference between paint thinner and lacquer thinner? Tim, stay there. We've got some baseball questions for you. We're going to read. That one's a really good one right there. Does Jeff Fisher look like his Saturday plans consist of wearing an orange shirt to Home Depot in the desperate hope a lesser man asks him the difference between paint thinner and lacquer thinner? We come back with Tim Kirchen after this. Do any of you know what the setup is behind Kirkshin? Cody, is the setup behind Kirkshin when he's on television fake books? Is he one of the people in the Zoom calls that you are objecting to, trying to give off the impression that they are more well-read than they are? Is Kirkshin one of the people that we can accuse this of? Kirkshin, what's behind you on your Zoom calls when you're on television? Oh, I'm sorry. We're going to get Kirchen on the phone here in just a second. But if you're just joining us, Greg Cody is accusing people throughout the industry of trying to give off more intellect than they actually have by putting fake books behind them on a bookshelf when they're on television.
Only because I think that it was Passon that told us that a couple of years ago for Christmas, you sent Tim Kirchen, because he loves Diet Mountain Dew, a Diet Mountain Dew mini fridge, right? And we found out through a third party that the mini fridge that was sent to Kirkchin was a dud that was very loud and made a lot of noise. And he would have to unplug it every time he was going to do a hit on SportsCenter, Baseball Tonight, or whatever, right? So I think that it's real. I also think that even though a broken fridge was sent to Kirkchin, because it was a gift, he would be too polite to actually throw away a fridge that doesn't work and keeps it there and keeps plugging it in, hoping that one day it will work and won't get rid of it just because you gave it to him.
All right, so let's ask him those two questions. Kirkchin, do you still have the broken fridge that we sent you as a holiday gift?
Yeah, it is a foot and a half to my right at the moment. It is in the corner of my office. I use it kind of as a little desk to put stuff on. But yes, it is not turned on because, as I told you, it usually sounds like a lawnmower, which can be a little bit annoying. The motor is not working particularly well. So it's unplugged, but it's right here. I'm looking right at it right now.
Will you accuse anyone publicly here of having fake books in their background when they go on television? Jeff Passan, anyone who has fake books in their background?
Well, I know Jeff Passan doesn't have fake books in his background because he's a really good writer and he's written books before. Adam Schefter has written, I think, 5 books, so there are no fake books there. I don't know. I would say nobody has fake books in the background.
Okay, you are wrong because Jeff Passan has admitted as much, and we are going to have Adam Schefter on here to accuse him of it in the next segment. Stugatz, what do you have for Kirkchin?
Well, Timmy, we're wondering, it's a great point by Billy. Are you too nice, or have you ever re-gifted a gift that you do not like? Hey, I don't like this. I'm going to act like I like it and then give it to someone else down the road. Have you ever done that?
No, I've never re-gifted anything. And you guys sent me this refrigerator unsolicited. And just because it doesn't work, I am not going to send it back. It was a gift. I would never say to somebody who was as kind as you guys were to me to say, hey, we're going to give you this and it doesn't work. To be angry about that would be ridiculous. And to return it would be ridiculous. And
Is there anyone in your life that you've noticed has given you repeated bad gifts? Because I think what may be going on here is people know you're too nice to say, I don't like this or I don't want this. So like they'll go down the street and it's like your 60th birthday or something and they'll pick up a couple pine cones and be like, oh, Tim, I got these for you. I thought you'd love pine cones. And they know you're not going to be like, this is just a crap gift.
No, nobody consistently gives me bad gifts, but the family did. And I love my family more than you'll ever know. Kids, wife, everyone gave me a big green egg a couple years ago for cookouts in the backyard. Now, I stink at anything that is technical. If I have to read how to use something, it's not going to go well. So I've tried very hard to get this big green egg to work properly, to the right heat, to regulate the temperature, and I have failed spectacularly. So it was a wonderful present that I have failed in an attempt to make it work. I can make it work. I just can't get the right heat. I overcook. I undercook. I stink at it, and that makes me feel really bad that they bought me this really nice present, and I haven't done the right things with it.
A total hypothetical. If a father were to get his grown adult son as a birthday gift, a pineapple for his birthday, $3.99 from a local grocery store, wrap it up and give it to the son, what would you think of that person as both a gift giver and more generally as a father?
A pineapple, I'm not sure that works. I love pineapple, but I'm not sure it should be a gift. I got in trouble once, by the way, for a wedding present, but it was a present for the groom. We had a bachelor's party type of thing, and I bought him for his new house a shop vac, which is like the most handy thing in the world. But somehow it got confused that I had given the couple for a wedding present a shop vac, which I would not do for the husband and wife, but for just for the husband as part of the bachelor party gifts that he got, I got him a shop vac. So in the confusion, I took some heat for giving a shop vac as a wedding present when I was actually giving it to a man as to somebody to put in his garage for getting married.
Again, what do you think of the person who gives a pineapple as a birthday gift to his adult son as a father?
I don't know the story here, Dan, but did Poppy give you a pineapple?
No, it's worse than that. Greg Cody gave his son as a birthday gift
a
wrapped $3.99 pineapple.
That's Grossman.
Happy birthday, son.
All right, let me give you some more of these. Are you ready, Kirch? And it's good to finally have you back. Does John Fox look like the general manager of a Bahama Breeze? Does Mike McCarthy look like the dejected turned Pike toll booth attendant who was recently demoted to monitoring the Easy Pass lane? Does Adam Silver look like what computers will create when they take over and form a cyborg to speak to the rest of us humans? Does Andy Reid look like a beekeeper? Does Tito Francona look like the guy who excitedly plays his air maracas when the waiter brings him sizzling hot fajitas? Does Mike Leach look like a witch who rides a vacuum cleaner instead of a broom? Does Vic Fangio look like the guy who gives his daughter a firm handshake on her wedding day? Kirkson, good having you back. We'll talk to you again next week, buddy.
Thanks. I haven't laughed in 2 weeks. Seriously, thank you.
Yeah. Love you, buddy. Love you. So Greg Cody has made an accusation echoing throughout the land. A bunch of journalists, elites, trying to give off that they are more literary than they actually are. Cody, make your accusation to the face of our pillar of professionalism, Adam Schefter. Go ahead and make your accusation.
Well, Adam, it's not directed at you solely. It's rampant, and I think you would agree. You watch TV. I was particularly citing the late-night shows where every guest on Zoom on a late-night show is sitting in front of a bookcase. Whether these bookcases are authentic or scenery, I don't know. But either way, it just, for me, gives off a little bit of a pretentiousness, a little bit, oh, look, I'm one of the literati. Look how well-read I am. And again, nothing against you personally.
No, defend yourself, Schefter. It is against you personally.
Well, let me say this. As the forerunner of the literati sports reporters, basically ESPN came into my house when I started there 11 years ago. And they put in a green screen right above what was a real bookcase in an office that existed on bookshelves that I put my books that I had read. And they said, here's the green screen to use when you do your first hit. And we did the first hit. I didn't have time to pull it down. And I don't know, they kind of liked the way the books looked. I kind of liked the way the books looked, and we left it. And I don't think 11 years ago there were very many people doing live shots in front of their books. That was purely accidental. And so I have up there, you'll notice, they're not real deep, rich novels for the most part. There's a lot of John Irving. I love him as a writer. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Pat Conroy, fantastic. Oh. But a lot of sports. I've read basically all those books behind me. I've read them all. Now, on the top shelf, there are these like thick leather-bound books that I wanted to get rid of that my wife did not let me get rid of that were basically in that office before I took occupancy of it. So I have not read those nondescript, leather-bound, pretentious-looking books that you're talking about, Greg, on the top shelf. Absolutely. I have not read those. Will not read those. Those are like some of the classic works, you know, Shakespeare and whatnot. I'm not reading that. Not interested in reading that. But the other books, I've read them. I've read them, and I can't speak to what other people are doing. I'm just telling you exactly what I've done. That bookshelf was brought into ESPN 11 years ago on an accidental basis. The green screen still sits there. It has never once been used. If ESPN is listening, could they come take that away and take it out of my wall? That would be great. And that's basically the story behind the bookcase of this pretentious sports writer.
Thank you, Adam. We appreciate that you allowed us to waste your time. Thank you, sir.
You got it.
Did you want to talk basketball with him, Stugatz? What did you want to talk about? Did you want to talk about Tyreek Hill saying 7 championships for the Chiefs?
No, I was wondering because Greg said that, Adam, you watch TV. I'm not certain Schefter watches TV. In fact, I think it should be a poll question.
mean, you don't think he has time for television? You don't think Adam Schefter has the time for it? Or he's just
I don't think Schefter watches TV the way we all watch TV. I don't think he's glued to ESPN. I certainly don't think he's watching television series. How can you when you have 4 phones stuck in your face all the time? There's no way.
All right. Well, Adam Schefter is still there. Adam Schefter, what kind of television do you watch? Do you binge watch anything? What do you regularly watch?
I regularly watch almost nothing. Love CBS Sunday morning on Sunday morning, early in the morning. Love that. And honestly, I let my wife watch whatever she wants, which is a lot of Bravo, a lot of Andy Cohen, a lot of Housewives shows. While I'm on the phone texting, playing with my NBA fantasy basketball team, whatever it may be at night, right? She's watching all the shows. I don't really care. Now, there was one great series that I watched during quarantine. Well, I watched a lot of things. The Last Dance was excellent. The Lance Armstrong series was very good. We did watch Love Life on HBO Max with Anna Kendrick, and that was excellent. That was very, very good. I would highly recommend that. And we watched Little Fires Everywhere, which is a book I had read at one point, which is on my bookshelf. And, but I'm not a big TV guy. I'm just really not. CBS Sunday Morning is a great show. Love that show.
All right. Thank you, Adam. We will talk to you soon. Thank you for allowing us to waste your time. Good talking to you.
Abrupt departures always.
Yes, yes. See you later. Chris, what is it that you were trying to get in there, but I didn't have the proper timing there because I'm trying to get to the rest of the show, trying to get rid of Adam Schefter, but I have not been successful yet in getting rid of Adam Schefter. So what do you have for Schefter?
I'm just imagining, he says he doesn't watch a lot of TV, but when he does, I'm imagining if he's watching a series, he has to continually stop it and say, what just happened here? I missed it. I was texting. Yeah. Like his wife is constantly having to rewind stuff. I imagine he's the worst to binge a show with.
It's gotta be pretty annoying to be Adam Schefter on top of all the news, all the time. Greg Cody of the Miami Herald probably can't even imagine it, given that the biggest story he's ever broken is betraying me to report that I had gotten engaged.
That's such a lie. That's such a lie.
What do you mean it's such a lie?
I mean, I did break that story, but like I've
it is your
said
biggest
many
story,
times before.
Right?
It's your biggest story. What's a bigger story?
It is in my top 10, and as I've told you many times before, I don't want to insult the others on the list by putting them in any sort of rank.
I would love a top 10 list of biggest stories you've ever broken, because I'm guessing the Lebatard nuptials is probably the top 3.
What I'm telling you is that, no, it's not the top 3. It's number 1. And wait, like, if we keep badgering him, the second story he's broken will be so pathetic. So pathetic.
I want to know.
I will come up with a top 10 list.
You're going to do a top 10 list of stories you've broken. Because
I'll have it for next week.
The last time we had this conversations, Stugatz, you know what he said? Pat Riley told me that they would have taken their second round pick in the first round.
That's true. I don't know if that'll make the top 10, but that's absolutely true.
All right. We come back with a Greg Cody back in my day and his top 10 list, top 10 stories he's ever broken.
No, that'll be next week.
Next.
Cha-ching. Now. Time for some ads.
Put it together during the break, Greg.
Jeez.
We're coming back with it next segment. The biggest breaks in.
I won't have it for next break. I got to research it.
I mean, he's got to go through the roll next.
There aren't that many. He doesn't have 10. He doesn't.
I got to research it.
You don't have 10 stories in your career that you've broken.
It'll be ready next week.
You're a terrible reporter. You're hoping I forget.
Put it in the calendar, Billy, so we don't forget, because he doesn't have 10 stories that he's broken. And if he does have 10, the bottom five are going to be intergalactically weak. Like, if he does have 10, like, the number 7 is going to be some bowling story that he broke.
That's right.
Baron Davis going to join us in 15 minutes. We've got Stugatz's weekend observations to get to on a Friday. We're going to do that. Nice. But first, it is time now for Greg Cody's, and he's not sure whether he's done this subject before or not, so I can't wait to find out together. Greg Cody's Back in My Day.
And now, it is time to take a trip down memory lane. Here's your guy, Greg Cody, with Back in My Day.
Disclaimers! You know, Roadrunner is the nickname for the chaparral bird, the fast-running ground cuckoo generally found in the desert. The most famous of the Roadrunners used to drive Wile E. Coyote crazy in the cartoons of my youth. In one episode, Wile E. Coyote strapped himself to an Acme rocket to try to catch the Roadrunner, but wound up smashing headfirst into a mountain. The best thing about this cartoon was that there was never any legal disclaimers warning impressionable young viewers to never try this at home because, well, it sort of went without saying. Hey, Daddy, I need a rocket ship. Why's that, son? I need to go to the Mojave Desert in Mexico and try to catch a chaparral bird. Back in my day, we didn't need warning labels because we counted on common sense. Nowadays, disclaimers, which essentially are statements that deny responsibility and attempt to stem the tide of litigation, are everywhere and go to extremes. When you buy a hot coffee at McDonald's, the cup warns you the contents are hot. If you ever dare to get on an airplane again, examine the back of that small bag of peanuts. It will tell you, caution, may contain peanuts. On a 10-pack of plastic coat hangers at Publix, there is the advisory that reads, do not swallow. Imagine, before Amazon, you'd often hear the disclaimer, allow 4 to 6 weeks for delivery. Anybody remember that? A Vidal Sassoon 1500-watt hair dryer warns you, do not use while sleeping. My favorite disclaimers tend to be the ones on the end of TV ads for prescription drugs. They are usually said in a soft mumble or at the blur speed so you don't quite catch the absurdity of what was just said. I can tell you, if an ad says, may cause rectal bleeding or death, ask your doctor if it is right for you. I'm either finding a different pill or a different doctor. An actual commercial for a sleep aid I won't name cautions that side effects may include aggressiveness, agitation, hallucinations, confusion, risk of suicide, and tongue or throat swelling that may be fatal. All things lending themselves to you drifting off peacefully into a nice night's sleep. I'll take a fitful night tossing and turning in a pool of my own sweat rather than risk some of those side effects. Big Pharma, how about you figure out how to make safe medicine that doesn't need scary disclaimers? For the other stuff, let's do away with simpleton warning labels and start rewarding common sense. Because if you order hot coffee at McDonald's and take a big gulp, you probably deserve the scream that follows. And I want to be on that jury when you try to sue somebody over your own stupidity. As for strapping onto a rocket to chase a bird, I only tried that once as a kid. Lesson learned. Luckily, there were no mountains in my neighborhood. I'm Greg Cody, and that's how it was back in my day.
You say that, but my brother, this is a story from our youth. My brother was watching on television, a television or a movie stuntman showing how it is that you can light yourself on fire and then be the stuntman who goes through the scene sort of waving his arms frantically. And he watched this, but he was too young to know what Vaseline was or where to get it. So he just walked out with the can of gas in order to recreate what it is that he just saw on television. And my mother happened to stop him because she was just on the phone as he walked by smelling like whatever it was, gas or turpentine. My brother was 33 years old, 33 years old at the time he did that. Greg Cody mentions these disclaimers. We love it. The happy ukulele that plays when people tell you about the symptoms that include anal leakage.
Playoff P has been proven to work in the regular season for those who have struggled with moderate to severe postseason disappointment. It is not recommended as a first option. Do not take Playoff P while on Grainger. Side effects include choking, heaving, not finishing, constipation, finishing early, and all-around disappointment. Playoff P is not for everyone. Call your doctor if you experience susceptibility to catfishing, kissy face, Australian sensitivity, paternity suits, the inexplicable urge to play for the Lakers, or thinking that dude's butt belongs to a lady. If you experience the loss of Oladipo, please call your doctor immediately. Get headed in a new direction with Playoff P.
You watched the end of that last night, right, Stugatz? The numbers are jarring for the Clippers when Paul George or Kawhi aren't on the court, and LeBron guarded both of them late last night.
Yeah, but Playoff P is already in postseason four, missing a chance, a three at the end, a chance to give the Clippers a victory.
Did old man Cody stay up late enough? I saw that Zion Williamson only played 15 minutes in the early game. I was wanting to see him late in a close game, a good game. The better of the two games yesterday was the New Orleans-Utah game, but did you stay up late to watch LeBron James, old graybeard, 35 years old? What were your takes from last night?
I thought both games were great. I thought the quality of play was pretty good for the first game back, which I didn't necessarily expect. I thought the games were higher scoring than I expected.
It's Dan, Stu, and Greg Cody on ESPN Radio.